So in undergrad, I studied for... Edit that. So
Hi, we are the ASM Behind the Scenes podcast. My name is Jin Yao.
I'm Ximena.
And I'm Sergio. We're three seniors at ASM.
In this podcast, we will explore the lives of upper school staff members and alumni with the hopes of bringing you fun stories about high school, college, and life in general.
We'll be releasing an episode every week on Fridays.
If you have any cool ideas for future episodes, feel free to email s23142@asmadrid.es. But before further ado, let's get into it.
What's up, guys? Today we have Mr. Dylan, a social science and economics teacher for high school students. Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So our first question is, what's your favorite high school or college memory that you remember?
Like high school, not so much. I didn't really enjoy high school that much. In my junior high school, I was actually a very good student, finished third in my class. And when I went on to high school, I really got interested in other extracurricular things such as sports, friends, and things like that. Plus, I didn't find the way that the teaching was done and the education was done to be very dynamic or exciting. There's a lot of memorization and things of that nature, which I kind of lost a passion for a while. So, I mean, I passed my classes, I did well, but it wasn't something that I felt was, you know, the biggest memories are being with friends and playing football, soccer, playing baseball, and the social bonds I created.
Yeah.
And in terms of being in school, perhaps not the most exciting experience going from box to box. University I found interesting because I was faced with different ideas from a politics, from an economics, from a history standpoint, different ideas than I grew up with in my neighborhood, coming from a conservative Catholic family in New York City, and being faced with these alternative viewpoints, which I had never been faced with before. So I became quite interested in exploring myself and where ideas come from. And that, to me, that was very valuable. And then, but still, I was in university because that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to go to university. Yeah, so that's just what we do. I wouldn't say that I explicitly picked out my course of study. I was like, maybe I wanted to be a lawyer. Perhaps I wanted to go to a journalism school, definitely. And after I graduated university, I actually ended up going for pre-med. I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do all the way through my early 20s. It was only when I went to grad school and I started getting out into my career where I realized what my passions were. In grad school, graduate school specifically for majority-minority dynamics and political science was one of the most transformative periods of my life because I was full-time immersed in things that I was really interested in, which includes studies of social history and studies of how different ethnicities and races interact with each other across place and time, and I was able to read about that and absorb material about that and discuss that with like-minded people in one of the most diverse universities in the world, Queen's College. So to me, that was like a really great time period where I was able to have more agency and autonomy over my studies.
So what did you do right after grad school?
What did you do in college and then
or
grad
between
school?
The time period?
Yes. So in undergrad, I studied for social studies or history. I started out with a psychology major in North Carolina. I switched, came back to community college because I wasn't sure I was going to study, and I ended up studying history with minors in economics, psychology, and secondary education. And the goal after that, I was in the evenings. I was a bartender and a waiter, and the goal was to perhaps go to journalism school, which I did explore. I kind of left law school on the side. I said maybe I'll get back to that in my mid-20s. And like I said, I did a year of pre-med at Brooklyn College. I took Organic Chemistry 1 and 2, Organic Chemistry 2, and Calculus. While I did pretty well at them, I didn't enjoy it. So I was like, I don't want to spend 8 years doing this. So my mom was in education, and she kept pushing me, go be a teacher for a few years. You might enjoy it, and you know you can figure out what you want to do. So I got into education around the age of 25, and I realized I did enjoy it. Working in the inner city, very, very different kind of cohort, very different kind of group of students. 86% of the families or the students' families came below the poverty level. Mm-hmm. A lot of violence, mm-hmm. Some students murdered, some oh, wow. students going to jail for a while, and all the problems you would see in the inner city in terms of violence and insecurity, food insecurity, physical insecurity, and a lack of love and empathy that a lot of these students were faced with. But I found it valuable, and I did that for 6 years, teaching them skill sets with the social sciences, and specifically global history and economics. So that's what I did.
Did you have to, like, before being a teacher, before teaching, did you have to kind of learn something, or did, like...
Right.
Go to some sort of, like, maybe training or something, or did you just directly go into...
So my minor was secondary education in undergrad, yeah. which is important, and then you have to go through a series of tests in New York City, 3 tests, mm-hmm. which are actually extremely easy. So actually, when you do start teaching, I felt that I was under-equipped to be a teacher. Not only was I under-equipped to be a teacher in terms of understanding pedagogy, in terms of understanding content mm-hmm. and how to manage a classroom, I was especially unequipped... under resourced to be a teacher in the inner city, mm-hmm. which you have to deal with all these other problems that are taking place. There's yeah. someone with a first grade reading level. There's someone with a 12th grade reading level. There's yeah. a person has get to have breakfast this morning. This person has emotional problems and abuse in the house.
Yeah.
This person has a 30% attendance rate. So all these different issues, and you have a class of 22 students, and you have 45 minutes to teach them about the Renaissance.
Yeah.
It was unbelievably daunting. Yeah. So after 6 years, I was burnt out. Mm-hmm. I took a trip to Argentina, and I decided on my second day in Argentina, I'm not going back. And
Argentina?
I was going for the Copa America in 2011. And I decided I was going to pursue full-time my PhD mm-hmm. in majority-minority dynamics. So I came back from Argentina, I quit my job on July 29th of 2011,
oh, wow.
and I started a year of studies for my first year of studies for the PhD in Majority-Minority Dynamics. I was going to focus on indigenous cultures in Bolivia, so in 2012 I went to Colombia for 6 months, I was going to go to Brazil for 6 months to study mm-hmm. Spanish and Portuguese, mm-hmm. and I ended up staying in Colombia for 7 years.
Mm-hmm. Wow, so you had a lot of jobs and you studied a lot. But I forgot where did you go in high school and college again? Like where?
So where? I mean, I'm from New York City. Okay. So for high school, I went to Midwood High School, which okay. was a test school. There were two different programs, mm-hmm. The humanities program and the science and technology program. Although I was much more into humanities and creative stuff, I was also very good at science and math. And my parents are like, science and math is where, you know, the
yeah.
future is.
Yeah.
You're going to mm-hmm. be in the science and math program. It's probably part of the reason why I didn't super enjoy high school, mm-hmm. because I was down a track, which wasn't really what I was passionate about. It was kind of what I was good at and mm-hmm. what I'm supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, thinking about that, I might have been a lot... Things might have gotten progressed a lot quicker
mm-hmm. yeah.
in my life if I was able to really think about my own choices and decisions mm-hmm. when it came to that.
And was it hard to adapt after moving to Argentina and Colombia?
Yeah, I mean, it was the first time in my life where I was an outsider.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, growing up, obviously, in the late 20th century, early 21st century, as a white English-speaking male,
mm-hmm.
You're never an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we do have a lot of cultural and economic and political hegemony, power over you know, our environments, naturally. Which oftentimes you don't recognize. And when you go to a place where you don't speak the same language and you look different, I mean, you are an outsider. In many ways, people treat you better because of this global hegemony that we have, this mm-hmm. global power that we have as white English-speaking males
yeah.
in the 21st century. But it was strange being able to not speak a language and to get around and to try to interact with people. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, in Colombia, people are so helpful and friendly, and mm-hmm. they would come and, you know, if they see you struggling, they would go out of their way to help me out. So it was a massively educational experience.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the best educational experience I've ever gone through.
Yeah. And nice. Do you see, like, I mean, I don't know, do you like Spain, kind of, do you see it in a similar way, or do you see it kind of more similar to the U.S.?
No, in my opinion, I think Spain in general, but Madrid specifically, is the best city I've ever lived in.
And why Madrid?
Well, I never had an interest. So I've traveled. I just traveled to my 40th country last
oh,
week.
Wow.
last month, which was Morocco. Qatar was my 39th country. Mm-hmm. And I never had an interest in coming to Spain. So I had been to like 17, 18 countries in Europe at that time. And I just came here because the job came up. Mm-hmm. And I was pleasantly surprised. I like Madrid because of its diversity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's over 250,000 Colombians alone and half a million Latin Americans, and I love that kind of diversity.
Mm-hmm.
But there's people from all around the world. It has a fantastic transportation system,
yeah.
which allows people from all stratas
to get.
And socioeconomic status to mix
mm-hmm.
and to travel and to move from A to B. Very good healthcare, decent
mm-hmm.
education system.
Yeah.
It's safe, it's clean, people care.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's and there's opportunity.
Yeah.
And I think
wow.
that there are very few cities in the world which
yeah.
offer that. Coming from New York, having lived in Charlotte, North Carolina, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Bogota, Colombia, and traveling all around, I've never been in a city like Madrid,
mm.
from my opinion.
I think it's time for our surprise question. So, and I think this one suits you since you've been to, 40 countries. But if one day you woke up in a futuristic and sci-fi world that you know nothing about, what would you do first?
So a futuristic and sci-fi world, are there any characteristics to that?
Like,
it's whatever
what
you...
Is what is future? How do you define
like, imagine
futuristic?
You woke up in, like, year 3,800.
Okay.
And it's a whole, like...
Different.
Yeah.
Everything has always been progressing.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's been no... There's
yeah.
been no cataclysm
no.
or
yeah, yeah.
apocalyptic.
It's all
imagine like everything,
like
just,
skyscrapers, plants
yeah.
everywhere. I don't know. That's how, flying cars.
Yeah, flying cars.
Stuff
know.
Like that.
So things
technology,
are different.
Technology, I think.
Okay,
yeah.
cool. Yeah, I mean, so I mean, I talk about this a lot in class. So and this is going to be data based what I'm going to say. But if you picked up, so humans have been around. It seems the fossil record, the data shows about 200,000 years,
mm-hmm.
possibly 300,000 years, but that range. Modern, you know, anatomically, modern humans, with the ability to, think in similes and metaphors and,
mm-hmm.
In terms of the brain evolution, 50,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been able to, domesticate animals and do agriculture for about 10,000 years. And along that time, if you picked up someone 50,000 years ago and moved them 40,000 years in the future and dropped them to 10,000 years ago, or if you picked up someone 8,000 years ago and moved them to 1,000 years ago,
mm-hmm.
they would be able to exist in those societies, even though they moved forward 40,000 and 7,000 years,
mm-hmm.
and they would not really sense much of a difference. They'd be able to
yeah.
mix, right?
Hmm.
If you picked me up, which I was alive in 1990, and just picked me up and just dropped me in 2023, I would have a lot of trouble understanding what's
yeah.
going on. I didn't have the internet. Cell phones didn't exist. If they did, they were these big things, which not many people had. Beepers were just coming out.
Mm-hmm.
We did have a 16-bit video game system, Sega Genesis, which just came out. But technology wasn't really integrated into our lives and society.
Yeah.
No internet, no artificial
yeah.
intelligence,
mm-hmm.
or very limited. It,
yeah.
it was the changes were not very perceptible,
mm-hmm.
yeah. right? So if you pick me up in 1990 when I was about your age, a little bit younger,
mm-hmm.
and drop me into right now, I would have a lot of trouble moving around in society.
Mm-hmm.
So when you ask, if you pick me up in 2023 now and drop me in 3800 or even 2060, 2070, I
yeah.
think that in your lifetimes, my lifetime, hopefully, I think it'll be very difficult to navigate that world. It'll be a very confusing world.
Yeah,
one, it's going to have things with artificial intelligence and virtual reality and different kinds of technologies, social, economic, and political, which are going to be very difficult for someone who is just placed there, but who evolved or who grew up and had formative period in another time
yeah.
or place. It's going to be very difficult to understand and navigate.
Yeah, that's really funny how, like, when you said that if you, let's say that a caveman was placed a little bit, like, maybe 7,000 years forward, then they wouldn't see much of a difference. But then now it's like, why now do we have suddenly this
yeah.
boom of innovation that in like 50 years everything's going to be so different? And I find it so like interesting how fast everything's advancing, and it just started. Like, this fast advancement just started, and it's just going to keep on
yeah.
going more and more.
Speedy.
With technology.
It seems, if the way we're perceiving the world around us correctly, which I see no reason to think that we're not,
mm-hmm.
it seems like we're all having similar experiences and perceiving things similarly. it does seem that we're going through the most transformative period in the history of the conscious universe.
Yeah.
and that we've created that.
Yeah.
There's probably things that we're not seeing that are out there or even around us that we're not understanding that might push back against that statement. But as it seems to us, as we're perceiving things and we look at the history, human history and even before that, that this is the most transformative period. And we a million years from now, or in 3,800, when they look back at this period, all things being the same,
mm-hmm.
or all things not being the same, if things do go wrong because of this, mm-hmm. they will look to this period in our lifetimes as that moment when things changed, which is... it's an amazing time to be alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so going back to the podcast, how was the process of, getting into college and then starting your career? Like, was it difficult or did it all flow very well? Like, just your experience on how your career started.
I mean, like my first year's teaching and how I got into it, it was difficult because everyone wants, someone with at least 2 years experience, and I didn't have that. Everyone asks for that. It's in every career. It's like, well, if you're only looking for 2 years experience, how does anyone ever start? So basically it's you have to take the job or the offer you're given. So I did multiple. It was quite deflating. I did many, many interviews, many, many job fairs. And I did get a few offers, a few junior high schools I didn't want to go to, but I got a lot more rejections than offers.
So
I was down to like 3 high schools, and they were very tough inner city schools. Like I said, that's where you start.
Mm-hmm.
And the general thing is you start there, and if you're good at what you do, you progress, and you go to schools which have better students, which means they come from higher socioeconomic statuses, they're more affluent, and they get the better teachers. And then if you're not good, but you're just good enough, you'll stay in the inner city with the lower SES students and lower SES communities. And if you're really bad, you'll either get fired or quit. So it's all backwards. The students who need it the most get the worst. And if the worst or the beginners, like I was ill-equipped, if the beginners make it, then they get out of there. And look where I am now. Yeah. And it's actually depressing. So it was difficult to start. Because I was dealing like with all the issues I was talking about before, in my first year, first 2 years in the summer, I did think about quitting and going in another direction, studying something else, or I have friends working in finance, doing that, but I stuck with it, and I'm happy I did. My life has turned out. I think I have a dream life, so. I have there's no complaints, but it wasn't lovely. And like I said, after my 6th year, I quit because I couldn't take it anymore. So I just fell back into education by chance in Colombia.
Yeah. So talking kind of going back to sort of relating to the surprise question of we kind of talked about like technology in a sense of like how technology is going to change. But how would you say that maybe high schoolers or the people, maybe your friends, or just high school in general, was different when you were in high school compared to us?
Right. Yes. Yeah, so a lot of it was memorization.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember elementary school, memorizing the presidents in order, memorizing the states, memorizing the capitals, memorization, memorize the times tables, the 1 × 9 division tables.
Yeah.
It was a lot of memorization. And the reason being is that's where you get your information from. I can go to the library and get my information. My parents bought me encyclopedias, a whole catalog of encyclopedias. And I go to school and get my information. And what's changed now is all the information is already out there. And computers can do the times tables, calculators, way better than I can on paper. And they can do all this other stuff. And if I want to know the capital of Montana or the capital of Spain, I can just look it up.
Yeah.
I don't have to memorize this stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we went from like on a taxonomic scale where remembering and understanding was very tantamount to education, intrinsic to education.
Yeah.
Now what we try to do is focus on higher order thinking skill sets.
And understanding.
Critical thinking, creativity, collaboration amongst humans, communication, because these are kind of the things that computers and artificial intelligence
can't do.
won't be able to do on an actual on a profound level, or it'll take more time for them to do that. Knowledge, information retention, and being able to take that in and spit it out, computers can do that better.
Yeah.
Be able to crunch numbers, computers can do that better. So to teach things which I remember, understand, you know, is to say, hey, there's an infinite amount of data out there, and I'm the teacher going to tell you 14 things to memorize.
Yeah.
Like, who am I to tell you what's important and what's not important?
Yeah.
We're here to lead you to ask questions,
yeah.
and then you're able to navigate through this infinite amount of data that's out there to try to extract meaning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is just one thing about that is this statistic seems to be true, but in the last 2 years, 90% of the data ever created by human beings in the last 200,000 years, 90% of the data ever created has been created in the last 2 years. Which is interesting, right?
Yeah.
But that's not the interesting part about the statistic. 2 years from now, that same statistic will be true.
Yeah.
Meaning
yeah.
that 2 years from now, the data that we have today will account for less than 10% of the data on Earth.
Probably. That's crazy.
So with all of that data out there, the goal isn't to fill that your head with that data because it's an impossible task. The computers have processed more data in this meeting than you'd be able to process in the next 2 years. So what we need to do is, how do you navigate through that and make sense of that data with your skill sets? And we didn't talk about that when I was a kid because computers didn't exist
True. And I feel like that's where the role of the teacher comes in too, because you're a teacher, and obviously you kind of understand how right now teachers shouldn't be just spitting facts to you, but they should be teaching you how to do those critical things, that, like how to critical think and how to think creatively, how to collaborate. Those are the I feel like those are the skills that now in education, that's what they're teaching you to do, rather than
and it's difficult.
And
hopefully.
I think I like that more. I like it more because it's I feel like it's less robotic. I mean, for me it's less stressful in a sense, because it's like it's more open, more free in a sense, and you don't have to be limited to just the information that you're given, and you can just extract everything that you have and create your own ideas about it.
I think it's important, especially for the future social, political, and economic leaders of the world. But it's also difficult because I didn't grow up in this integrated world. And but I know what it was like before. So in one way, I can see what it was like before and what it's like now. But I didn't grow up in it, so I'm not fully integrated and fluent in it. As you won't be as fluent as a kid starting school this year, which is daunting and scary. So it is difficult to accomplish.
Yeah, I definitely think that education has changed since, like, I mean, for example, the middle school right now is, like, so different from when we were in middle school.
Yeah.
Like, not just the building is new. Like, everything, I feel like their teaching system and everything is is very different. And, like, their curriculum, their teachers, none of the teachers that my brother has right now in middle school are the same. And they're all doing different things and different everything.
And that's going to, as technology is advancing and being able to pick someone up and place them 30, 40 years from now. I think if you pick a teacher up right here, an advanced teacher, a teacher who's all integrated into, you know, the modern, you know, 21st century learning, you know, understanding by design, C3 and social sciences, they know it all. They know all the pedagogy in and out. And you pick them up and drop them 40 years from now, they would be completely, they would be fish out of water. The way we're learning, whether we're learning through virtual reality and communities around the world, which are not in the room, I'm sure that's going to be the case. I wouldn't be able to be, without evolving, I wouldn't be able to teach. If you just pick me up and drop me 20 years from now, I would be out of a job because I wouldn't know what to do.
Okay, so I think we should get to the last question. So kind of relating to when you mentioned you, like, right now you're living your dream life, what advice would you give current students to kind of find their dream life or find, just guide themselves through this process?
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, just the one thing is, like, society shapes us, and society being our close society and you know, family and friends and loved ones around us who meanwhile, and then society in general with marketing and advertising, you know, just, you know, pressure and stuff like this. So a lot of times, you know, we're always making decisions. Economics is the study of choice. And we're making thousands of decisions a day, most of them implicit, like we're not thinking about them. You know, a handful, you know, a dozen are explicit every day. And we are the culmination of all of our decisions. But a lot of these decisions are influenced to one way or another by external factors. and we get pulled in different directions because of this, by, you know, how other people might view us, or how society might view us, or how we might feel about ourselves in society. Mm-hmm. So I think just to be aware of that and cognizant of that, and to just, you know, meditate and think and reflect on, you know, what is it that you want out of life. And it's not just for careers, right? We're taught that our careers, when people ask you, who what are you? Mm-hmm. People say, oh, I'm a doctor, or I'm a teacher, or I'm whatever. Is that really what we are? Are we the jobs that we do? Or, you know, what are you? What makes you tick? What do you think about? Mm-hmm. What are you passionate about? Mm-hmm. And we never answer that, right? Someone says, what are you? And I say, well, you know, I really like, you know, quantum physics and, mm-hmm. and philosophy, and how these two things can, what are you? So what are you? Oh, yeah, I'm a teacher. Mm-hmm. So I think to reflect on this, and to always be thinking about how you think, metacognition, and the way you view the world and the lenses through which you view the world are going to shift and change over time, mm-hmm. especially if you travel and meet other people.
Mm-hmm.
So to be open to change, and y'all are in a good position where you'll be able to act on that. And I think this goes not only for career. I think this goes for friendships and relationships. Mm-hmm. I think this goes for romantic relationships and significant others. I think this goes for hobbies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, try to do what you're passionate about. Try to do something to where when the workday is over, you're still thinking about it because you're still into it.
Mm-hmm.
And when your girlfriend or your boyfriend or your husband or your wife is gone, you're still thinking about them and caring about them on a socially emotional level,
mm-hmm.
because that's your thing.
Yeah,
and I feel that a lot of people, too many people, don't have that life.
Yeah.
So
if I asked you, who are you? What would you say?
Oh man! I don't know. Who I am. I don't know. If you asked me who I am and what the world's about, you know, when I was 18, I would give you a specific answer.
Mm-hmm.
And if you answered, and if you saw it differently, gave pushback, I'd say you just don't understand yet. If you asked me at 26, I would give you a specific answer, but it would be much different than my 18-year-old answer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if you ask me now, I mean, I don't know. I'm a student.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to learn.
Mm-hmm.
I want to continue to learn. I want to surround myself with people and with
mm-hmm.
stimuli, which help me to question myself and the world around me,
mm-hmm.
and to understand, you know, what all this means.
All right.
That's
Thank you so much.
That was perfect.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you so much.